Hello, you're listening to the This Is The Way Phase 4 podcast, and I'm your host, Steve Lascalza. Today's discussion is about the fourth episode of Hawkeye, available for streaming on Disney Plus December 8th, 2021. Marvel Studios content released as of today's podcast is fair game for discussion, so consider this your only spoiler warning. We have a giveaway going on right now. You can listen to our past podcast for rules for entry, but you'll need a Twitter account and know how to use it. Our Twitter @ and Instagram handle are the same, @TheWayPhase4. If you'd like to visit our Facebook page to leave a comment, facebook.com/TheWayPhase4. You can also email us at thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com.
Now tell me this. If I send an email, where would I put the stamp?
We got you now, bro.
Episode 4 is titled Partners. Am I right? The full description on Disney Plus for the episode. Secrets are revealed about a key suspect in the mystery, while hard truths emerge about Hawkeye and his past. But as Clint and Kate's partnership finally takes off, their efforts to uncover more of the story result in a stunning and confusing battle against not one but two opposing forces. The brief description: secrets are revealed and hard truths emerge, culminating in a battle against two opposing forces. The director for episode 4 is again the team of Bert and Birdie. They will direct episode 5 as well, if I'm not mistaken, and then the finale will be back in Rhys Thomas's hands. There's another previously on segment before this one when you start streaming, as with episodes 2 and 3. Writing credits to Aaron Cancino and Heather Quinn, and according to what I saw on IMDb, this could be their first writing credits. The runtime says 41 minutes, but you know, I look for the new action, then go until the screen cuts to black before the end credits. Episode 4 then clocks 32 minutes, 51 seconds. So in that case, this makes us even shorter than episode 3.
Why are you making it so tough on us, bro?
Hello, I'm Steve Lascalzo for Cufflinks.com. December is a month of giving, whether it's your time, charity, or gifts to loved ones. If you need ideas to close out 2021 with some class, try visiting cufflinks.com. There, you'll find a small, family-run business with over 3,000 accessories available from the biggest brands and fandoms. Cufflinks, yes, of course. But you can find ties, tie bars, lapel pins, shirt studs, socks, and much, much more. The Marvel offerings will amaze you. Iron Man, Captain America, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Black Panther, Deadpool, Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers, Thor, Spider-Man, X-Men. You can choose bright, colorful accessories or wear something so subtle even Hawkeye would have to look twice to notice. You don't have to have the need for cufflinks to appreciate the quality, and you just might find yourself considering that bow tie or deciding between gift sets when you take a look at the items. There's more than Marvel, DC, Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, Star Trek, sports leagues like MLB, NFL, NHL, collegiate offerings, and of course Star Wars. In fact, just like our Star Wars themed podcast, we can offer you 15% off your purchase. You just have to enter THEWAY15 in the coupon code box at checkout. You don't need to bid against Armand and Jack at a secret black market auction. You can dazzle a crime kingpin or take the focus off your 10 rings of power. You can look marvelous while wearing Marvel. Cufflinks.com has you covered, no matter which universe you call home. Check out Cufflinks.com today. Last episode, we left off with Jack holding the Ronin blade to Clint's throat in Eleanor's penthouse. Remember, he and Kate went to try and dig into Bishop's security client files. They wanted to discover information on Jack, but started with Kazi, then they got locked out. When Clint went to investigate a noise, Jack surprised him.
Don't move.
So Kate comes running. Jack's not alone, though. Eleanor is there. And were they here from the beginning? Or did they arrive when the noise was first heard earlier? Either way, no one gets to ask them why they're in the apartment at this moment because, well, it's Eleanor's. And because it's Kate and Clint who are where they shouldn't be. We find out here that Clint and Jack do not know each other from each other's pasts. Jack won't have been Clint's sword trainer in a circus, as in the comics. Clint also doesn't know Eleanor. Nobody recognizes him, and Clint doesn't have a moment later suggesting that he recognizes them. In fact, Jack calls Clint a different cartoon name.
Oh my god, you're Archer.
Hawkeye.
Or Clint.
And maybe that's a hint towards their comic book past. We get a quick title slate, and then the four of them are gathered around the dining room table having a chat. The chat we saw bits of in the trailers, or teasers. Kate starts with lies. Clint needed to use the bathroom, their partners. Eleanor then gets a text in the middle of the conversation saying, someone used her laptop to access her work account. You know, you know anything about this, Kate? Well, Kate just keeps on talking. That's her thing. She calls Clint CB1, which he does not let slide. Kate just keeps laying it on, though. Jack, during the questioning, is much more jovial than Eleanor. She's probably used to Kate's lying, and she wants her to cut it out. Eleanor is skeptical that Hawkeye would be interested in partnering with Kate in any way. Though it's not an Avengers-level threat, Hawkeye begrudgingly admits they're at least working together in some way.
Yes. Sounds weird, because it is.
Kate gets up to leave with Clint, but Eleanor wants Kate to stay and Clint to go. She offers to see him out. He sees the sword Jack used, and Clint is going to take it on the way out. He must not have any suspicions about Jack at this point, because there are two people in the room. So if he takes that sword, he's basically tipping off that he is Ronan to anyone who might have had the thought. Eleanor just got done saying she's going to have to trust everyone at the table to do what is right. Here, I'm not sure that the sword wasn't just safer with Jack at this point, unless there's something even more special about it that we haven't learned.
Let me clarify.
Yeah.
She is not a superhero.
Eleanor seems concerned for her daughter's safety, and maybe on some level she really is, but she needles Clint with her next line about Natasha Romanoff. Wisely, though, Clint restrains himself from reaction, as he does moments later when she asks, you know, do you have kids? I'm just going to assume that you do. To a guy like Clint, those probing questions are surely almost an admission of guilt, or at least trying to intimidate. She says she doesn't want to lose Kate, and she's sure he's lost people, so she asks him, you know, you're going to forget this case, right? He declines, promising only to protect Kate. In the elevator when it closes, Clint pulls out the Ronin sword from his jacket, and then takes his phone out. I'm a little surprised there wasn't a little bit more care taken. You know, his device, couldn't it have been compromised just by virtue of being in the apartment somehow? Maybe he trusts whatever current Avengers technology he's got, but Kate used her mom's tech to track Clint's phone. It's possible whatever she did left a back door for Bishop security. Clint, though, he texts his wife, tells her, look up Sloan Limited. Eleanor, then, is making a phone call. I think it's either got to be to Kingpin, Maya, or maybe even Contessa Valentina Allegra de Fontaine. She says it's urgent, and I'm sure it's because Clint refused to agree to relent.
Hey, you find anything?
I talked to that friend of yours. He's been learning Russian and jogging a ton.
Laura calls Clint, and he's on the streets of New York now, and her code language in front of their kids is kind of funny. The kids don't know everything their dad has been into, but surely they know a lot and know when something's up. During the conversation, in fact, they let on that they know it's their dad, and I think rightfully are upset that dad hasn't been home. Christmas isn't just about that one day of gift giving. He's missing Christmas. He's not missing the day yet, but he's missing Christmas. It's a season of family time. If you're a long-lost uncle, sure, maybe. That's the one day of the year that you see the family, but this is their dad. Anyway, Laura looked into Sloan Limited, and it's a front for the Tracksuit Mafia, and Jack is the CEO. That's not the only revelation here, because Clint's wife speaks perfect German to ask him about anything else that might have been taken from the compound. She asks Clint about the watch. Clint thought it was destroyed years ago, but Laura says she thought his fancy clothes were too, right? So, is Laura actually Bobby Morse, aka Mockingbird? Or maybe she's just Mockingbird and it's not Bobby Morse like in the comics. Is her understanding of her husband's ways tied to a former life that she's happy to have given up? Well, Clint suggests they try activating the transmitter and checking the signal.
Well, that's worth looking into, man.
If you can, check the signal from the transmitter.
Kate, meanwhile, is still at her mom's with Eleanor and Jack. Jack's almost too nice at times to Kate. He did offer that butterscotch that one time. but she's extremely suspicious of him. Every time she tries to bring it up to her mom, though, her mom deflects or changes the subject. Eleanor says she needs to give him a break and brings up the Bishop holiday party. She suggests Kate is better at planning parties, and Jack comes in at that moment and suggests, hey, if there's going to be a party, there better be lots of dancing. Kate discovers at this moment her mom dances, another secret her mom held from her that Kate will probably attribute to Jack teaching her. During the dance, Jack messes up the song, singing Jack Frost nipping at your ear, and at the time I just assumed it was him adjusting the song, but...
You know what they sing, life is short, you never know what you're going to get.
The girls in the room inform Jack that he's always messing up sayings. I think this is a setup for a later plot point. Maybe Jack will be in disguise and give himself away to Kate through an aphorism gone wrong or something. Jack says getting laughed at by family is better than being alone in the holidays, and that reminds Kate Clint is alone right now. We see him grabbing frozen drink pouches to use as ice bags from Aunt Moira's freezer. Jack suggests board games like Risk, Yahtzee, Stratego. They're all strategy games, and we know he's pretty good at strategy, right, from his conversations in the past.
It's me. I come bearing pizza and holiday cheer. Let me in.
Kate has other ideas, though, and goes to Aunt Moira's to keep Clint company. It's a small gesture, but Clint does not fight it in the least. Kate's there to brighten his holidays. Instead of board games, it's going to be Christmas movie night. But Clint tells her her instincts were good. Sword Boy Jack is connected to the tracksuits, he tells her. And the scene turns into a montage of ugly sweaters, margaritas, and daiquiris. We do get to see a better picture of Aunt Moira on her movie poster, too. She's on the poster for A Chance of Love that Kate is drawing on. Then we find out also that it's not the arrows, but the arrowheads that are the tricks, and that it takes a special shaft for the tips to fit onto, and Clint has to get those back. Kate puts up a tree in front of the poster glass that she defaced, and I wonder if we're going to get a post-credit scene of Aunt Moira returning from her Florida vacation in the finale and seeing the big Christmas, like, what? Who was here? Kate then suggests boomerang arrows, and Clint points out how awful that is as an idea, and I guess this is a reversal of what happened in the comics. I think it was Clint that was like all high on boomerang arrows, and Kate was like, I don't know.
No, it's not impossible. The first arrow you release just has to be wood. So when you release the second one, it splits it right up the middle.
The two even talk trick shots. I think Clint is talking about splitting an arrow in midair with the way he talks about it. Then he shows her a bottle cap snapshot with a Christmas ornament, except it's got no sides like a frisbee or the bottle cap. He flicks the ornament, turns off the old school TV, which is why I guess that Aunt Moira has to have one, right, to set up this trick. It's not just a one and done trick, though. Clint teaches Kate the trick, and I think this is also something that's going to be important later in the season, like Jack's malapropisms. Maybe Kate has to flick something and turn something off or hit something, and that's going to come into play, perhaps. They're talking shop, and for the first time since Natasha, Clint has someone that has something of a similar skill set. He resisted letting Kate in, but he's starting to. She asks him about his best shot. He goes quickly to the one he didn't take and talks about how he was supposed to kill Natasha, but he didn't because he took a chance that she wanted out. He was right, of course, and as a result, he ended up being able to save the world. He tries to lighten the severity of the conversation by saying his job is basically managing loss. It's when they're watching It's a Wonderful Life's ending that Kate brings up Clint losing his family during the blip. She asks if during that time of loss is when he met Ronan. Clint's non-answer confirms her suspicion.
It's you, isn't it?
Like I said last episode, she was on to him. And Clint breaks some harsh truths down for her. She thinks he's just a protector. He points out he's been a tool of people in power. Sure, he does his due diligence, but if he's protecting people, it's by killing the bad ones. She thinks, just move on, Clint. He points out it's like the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, and it's the albatross around his neck, doomed to carry it around, because it's not just tied to his past, but his family's present. He lost them after the snap. and he thought they were gone. Now he gets a second chance, and he knows what it feels like to have them gone. To lose them again, that would be unbearable. He tells Kate he appreciates what she did coming to him tonight, but they need to rest for the next day. Takes out his hearing aid, and in the silence of the night, he sees images in his mind of his past and of Natasha's sacrifice on Vormir. The stakes are high.
It's 3 days until Christmas, and we've got your soundtrack for the holiday season.
Clint has a lead on his missing arrows. He had a tracer arrow among them, and it stopped moving at an NYPD facility, and he tells Kate she needs to contact the LARPers, who he heard from his first encounter are mostly NYPD and fire department employees. So he sends her on a mighty quest, and they're willing to accomplish her, but they want some superhero access in return. The tracksuit's new hideout appears to be a used car lot, and Kazi gets in his truck and discovers Clint is in the back seat. Clint, though, has taken away all the weapons from him, so he basically just has to sit there and listen. Clint lays out the situation, not for Kazi, but so Kazi knows that he knows. Clint knows Kazimir worked for Maya's father, William, for years, and now for Maya, but it's really the big guy in charge that's the real threat to everyone. Clint tells Kazi, I know the big boss doesn't want the attention, and I know Maya is obsessed with hunting down Ronan, and it's going to get her killed. Kazi is skeptical of Clint's altruism, thinking that he's playing her, you know, Maya against him, but Hawkeye just lays it out, says, convince Maya she's hunting a ghost, or she's going to die. And I think the implication is at the big boss's hands, not his.
Bells. Bells.
If you thought I was going to gloss over the Christmas in the Stars song, you thought wrong. Bells, bells, bells is played under the next scene, but it's clear during the transition. And Anthony Daniels' voice as C-3PO is just too recognizable for me to miss. It doesn't really have anything to do with the scene, but it's there. And how can you not appreciate a Star Wars reference? Kate seems to be getting a costume fitting from the Viking that stopped Clint. I think her name is Missy. Grills is not grilling, but baking cookies. And then Orville is on a laptop in a back room. Clint says he should have figured that Kate would be too chatty to respect the sanctity of Fortress Moira. I guess he doesn't say it, but I think his attitude says it all when he's like, you know, I told you to get the arrows, not stage a play. She's just a trusting soul. Part of me wants to now see the LARPers come to Moira's during the year in costume. And then, you know, her life is brightened by the guild who's come in there looking for Kate and Clint. But they find Moira Brandon, the film star. Now they're her new best friend. And she gets into it or something. I don't think we're going to see that. But that would be a pretty fun Easter egg or callback at the end of the season. Clint's a little ticked off. The chatting's going on, and Laura is texting to tell him, hey, the Rolex was not destroyed. She has an address, 3715 Godfrey Road. I couldn't find anything on that address when I Googled it. But because Officer Wendy was so proud of her bag, while I was Googling that, I Googled her, and apparently that's an Easter egg, as Wendy Conrad is a villain named Bombshell, and I think Orville is also a villain. I don't think she's a bad guy or Orville is a bad guy at all. I think it's just, hey, comic book fans, here's something for you. Clint and Kate leave with the arrows and head to scout out the apartment.
Something very important to me is pinging inside that apartment. It was stolen from a black market auction. I need it back.
For the second time in the episode, it's nighttime. Our dynamic duo is on a rooftop opposite the apartment building with the watch. Clint tries giving Kate a lesson on prioritizing quick exit over quick entry. We've seen it before. Natasha and Clint nonchalantly walk into a dangerous situation. Now we know it's because the thing they've been planning on is what if things go south. Clint is breaking down his plan, but then Kate just goes off by herself. She heads over to the apartment complex door, and her friendly chatter not only helps her get in without breaking anything, it also helps her shake the resident who let her in, because he thinks, this girl might be crazy for talking to herself. She's talking to her earpiece. Kate is carrying her bow around, and she remarks about how it's a little clumsy. And Clint tells her, well, you know, I've got a collapsible one. So I wonder, maybe she'll get one at the end of the series. When she enters the apartment, I thought first that it was Maya's. Then I saw a stereo system, and I thought, no. And then I realized that it was a record player, so I thought maybe, because that's old, and maybe she had it left over from her father. Then the flashing lights gave it away to me. Clint may not have realized it right away, because Kate described them as strobe lights. He directs her to find the watch because it belonged to an associate. I think it was important for Kate to guess earlier that he was Ronan. Because now we can assume that when he's talking about an associate, the watch is not his. He says it belongs to an associate whose cover would be blown. So it's got to be Laura's, right? She's got to be a Mockingbird. The kids are theirs, so she's probably not a Black Widow. There has to be some tie in there. And maybe it's just one that I'm not seeing, but I think she might be a former agent. Kate easily finds the watch on a shelf. I'm still left wondering if it's a piece of evidence, why didn't the tracksuits already use it to find what they wanted? They came in specifically for the watch at the auction, right? At any rate, before she leaves the shelves, Kate notices notes on Clint's family. That's when Clint finally tells Kate, get out. It's Maya's apartment, and he realizes the strobes are a visual alarm for someone who can't hear. We hear him struggling. He thinks he's finding Maya. But she's clearly in the apartment with Kate. If she punches her, knocks her down. Both Kate and Clint are in danger, but Clint fires a grappling hook to the building, sets the other end of a zip line to the rooftop, and tells Kate, use it. She does, but she gets caught midway. Maya doesn't try to cut her down. It's almost like she's waiting her turn. At some point, there's a masked figure who's fighting Clint. They use the zip line to pull off a jumping kick on him, and Kate slides the rest of the way with the momentum, and it knocks right into the night vision goggle-wearing masked fighter. That person pulls a gun. Clint steps in front of Kate, but Maya has come down the line too and knocks the weapon down. The mask wearer also uses Black Widow tech on Maya, like some taser kind of things. I guess Maya has some superhuman ability, though, to pull those taser bolts off of her, and she resumes the fight. It's a confusing, messy fight. Both Maya and the Masked Widow are fighting to get to Clint, but also fighting with each other or with Kate. At one point, Kate is tethered by the Widow and then thrown off the building. Clint thinks he lost her, but he looks over the edge and sees that she was caught by the tether. Somehow, he still has enough time to think about it, you know, maybe reminisce about holding on to Natasha, and then he cuts her loose into a netted group of Christmas lights. She falls to the ground. That's a big fall. I mean, that's 20 feet at least, right? But she gets right back up, comes right back upstairs. Then she pulls a sonic blast arrow out, knocks everyone to the ground. Kate gets kicked over a gap in the buildings, a gap that she kicked the gun over. She uses that space between her and Maya to pull back an arrow and hits Maya in the left shoulder. That's really gotta hurt. Clint pulls off the mask of the Widow, and it's Yelena Belova. She's after him because Val sent her after him, saying he was responsible for Natasha's death at the end of the Black Widow movie. Kate pulls back another arrow, but Yelena shakes her head no, throws down a tether for herself, and dives backward off the roof.
You're not my partner. Do you understand that? You never were. Someone is hired. The Black Widow assassin. This has gotten very real, very quickly. So I'm doing this alone.
Kate still thinks they're partners and still believes she's doing what she's meant to do. She says she knows the risks. He tells her he's not going to do it. He's not going to work with her. He tells her to go home, and it looks like she will.
It's over.
It's not. There are two more episodes. In Loki, episode 4 saw our Loki get pruned and end up at the end of time. That fifth episode ended with a battle with Eliath, and Sylvie and Loki ended up literally at the end of time. And the sixth episode revealed Kang the Conqueror. Here in episode 4 of Hawkeye, Clint and Kate are apparently ending their working agreement. We got the reveal that Yelena was involved. I'm just wondering which of the next two episodes are going to bring something shocking or surprising. Finding out Laura was a secret agent might be that. Having Wilson Fisk appear might do it. We're just going to have to wait and see since there's no cliffhanger here. They just say, all right, we'll see you later. What do you think? Email us at thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com or interact on Twitter or Instagram at thewayphase4 or on facebook.com/thewayphase4. Don't forget to enter our giveaways, both here from this podcast and from our Star Wars themed one, This is the Way podcast. Listen to past episodes of our podcast to find out how to submit an entry correctly, because it does have to be correct. Episode 5 of Hawkeye becomes available on Wednesday, December 15th, and there are only two left in this short season. This has been This is the Way Phase 4's discussion of Season 1, Episode 4 of Hawkeye. I'm Steve Lascalzo. Until next time, friends.